This episode is brought to you by Just Egg. You can't have plant-based breakfast without a plant-based egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/hrn.
This week on Meat and Three, we're talking organization. Not mise en place or keeping your knives in a row, but labor organizing.
If any restaurant worker is listening to this and is like, yes, I want something different, but I don't know where to start. First step they just need to do is to find one of us and get plugged in.
As independent contractors, they can't directly tell people, you know, when or where to work, but by using sort of gamified nudges to push people, that is sort of how they move the workforce around.
Tune in to Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Allison Kane, and welcome to In the Sauce, a podcast about building consumer brands from the ground up. I love doing this show because I get to interview everyone from production gurus to marketing and social media mavens, anyone who can guide me on this crazy journey. This is the story of building Haven's Kitchen sauces, but it's also the story of every growing brand because we're all in the sauce. Today, I'm speaking with Gail Becker, founder and CEO of Kali Power, the powerhouse company that uses the power of veggies to make healthier, easier versions of the food you crave. Within its first 2 years, Kali Power Pizza Crust became a top 10 frozen pizza brand and captured over 2% of the $5 billion U.S. pizza market. The brand has entered 5 new frozen food categories with their riced cauliflower, chicken tenders, cauliflower tortillas, sweet potato toasts, and most recently, cauliflower pasta. Kali Power is now the third fastest growing company of all food brands in America, with the number one better for you pizza, the number one gluten-free pizza, and the number one cauliflower crust pizza. It's available in over 25,000 stores and 5,000 restaurants nationwide. I have chills just reading that. Gail, welcome. I am so excited you're here. I think you know I LinkedIn messaged you a lot and you were gracious enough to respond. But I don't think that there are many stories like yours, and I couldn't be more thrilled to have you here. So thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. And I've been watching your journey and cheering you on. And it's really, I love having the chance to speak with you.
Thank you. Also, everyone, you'll want to be sure to stay tuned till the end because Gail has a little surprise gift for everyone. Yay. We've never had that before. Okay, Gail. So I know you were a career changer, and I'd love to start with that. You have an extensive background in a lot of fields, it seems like, from PR to government to, press staff, lots of things. So tell me about your background. How did you get to Kali Power? I want to hear everything.
I love the notion of being a career changer. I think that, you know, I've definitely had more careers than I have had cars, and I've had quite a few cars over my lifetime. I think I ended up in the food business, quite in an unorthodox way, although I'd like to think many of us do. I started out in news, and then I worked in government for a while, and then I worked in corporate America, and what I discovered after many years in the latter was that, you know, I was ready for a change. I needed to do something more meaningful with my life. My father had passed away, and I was looking for a change. I was looking for, you know, something that could really help people and make a positive impact.
And that was in 2016, correct?
Yes. So in 2016 is when I left my job in corporate America and decided to bet it all on a vegetable.
I mean, I would say pretty good bet looking back. And the legend of the failed Pinterest attempt at the cauliflower pizza crust that triggered a million plus crusts. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so not long after my father passed away, I was, you know, in the kitchen one night. My boys have celiac disease, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's given me a really good perch from which to watch the gluten-free industry evolve. And I just began to notice how much junk the industry was putting in gluten-free food. And I sort of thought, probably like, you know, many of us, that, you know, oh, I'll just wait for someone to do something about it. And right. no one ever did. Yeah. And, you know, ultimately, I guess I determined that person needed to be me. I made cauliflower crust pizza one night off the internet. I didn't invent it. There were about 569,000 recipes. When I checked, I picked one. It was fine. It was all right. Nothing great, but just fine. And right. When my eldest son asked me if I was going to make it again, about 2 weeks later, I said, there's no way I'm making that again, because right. it took 90 minutes to make a pizza crust after mm-hmm. I got home from a full day of work. I mean, who yeah. amongst us really has time for that?
And so, it probably wasn't the crunchy. You probably got, you know how yeah. the ones that you make at home are like a little like soggy-ish. You
exactly.
know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. All that plus a whole lot of cleanup. I mean, one right. disastrous looking kitchen. So when my son asked me if I would make it again, I said, I won't, but I will find it for you. And I looked everywhere. I looked in stores. I looked online. I couldn't find it. And so I decided, well, I guess it's something I'm going to do myself.
And so tell me a little bit about that, because, you know, I think a lot of the people that listen to this show, I think a lot of them are sort of my stage and maybe a little earlier, maybe a little beyond. But a lot of people are thinking about making these ideas and these products into reality. And there are so many different ways to do it. You know, I have friends that had an idea and went and pitched VC funds and got all this money. Then there's me, who kind of started and used the profits from my cooking school to kind of dip my toe into the CPG world. And, you know, I was a little more slow and steady. How did you do it? I mean, what, you didn't know anything about this industry. You were creating a new product, essentially creating a new category. There's a lot of anachronistic language and sort of everyone has a different, you know, acronym for the same thing. Like, where did you start doing the research?
Boy, it's such a good question. And obviously, posed by someone who's been through it. Yeah. There are a lot of different ways to start a business, particularly in the food sector. And, for me, my way was, I was going to go big or go home. You know, I left a pretty stable and successful career in corporate America. And I knew if I was going to do this, that I really wanted to do something in a big way that was going to have a material impact. Yeah. So, I did what really anyone in my position who knew nothing about the industry would have done, and is I surrounded myself with people who knew. Most of them, to be honest with you, were consultants very early on, consultants mm-hmm. that I, hired hourly to, teach me about the business, to, walk me through a grocery store, explain to me how it worked, help me find right. a co-manufacturer. Because to your point, I knew nothing. And it is right. a very tight-knit, closed, acronym-filled industry. And, I'm still learning language that, mm-hmm. over the years, because every day I learn a new acronym. But that's basically what I did. I was a sponge, and quite frankly, I still am a sponge, and that's one of the things I love.
And do you remember during that period, the first person I remember vividly, the first person that I told, kind of, he was in the CPG world. I don't even know exactly now what exactly he did, but someone told me I should speak to him. And I was like, no one's making a fresh sauce. No one's using HPP, which they've been using on juice forever, on sauce. And there's no reason for it to be like in jars in the middle mm-hmm. of the store. Mm-hmm. So what do I do now? And he literally was like, well, how much do you want it to be on shelf? And I was like, I think max $6.99. And he's like, great, your all-in costs need to be like $1.37. And I was like, $1.37. And I wrote that down. And then he was like, and how are you going to distribute it? And I was like, what do you mean? I mean, I remember literally brass tacks, like point A. Do you remember those early conversations? And do you remember anything that sticks out or that, you know, you would tell people in their first... the first five bullets you would say to someone in your position back then?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so many conversations I remember. I suppose the, you know, the most notable one was the one that I actually sat my two sons down at the kitchen table and made them listen to, because it was the first call that I made to see if this was even something that was viable. And I called... really the only person I knew in the entire food industry, which was kind of remarkable because I had come across a lot of people over the years. But I only ever met really or knew one person. So I called her and I said, I have this crazy idea and I want to know what you think. And she said, I don't think it's a crazy idea. I think it's a wonderful idea. And I had her on speakerphone and my two boys listened in and I hung up the phone and I said, okay, we're going to do this. And and since that moment, I have to say I would put the list of individuals who have helped me and guided me into two buckets. One are the people that I hired, either consultants or ultimately employees, who really, you know, were very gracious with their time and taught me and let me ask, you know, hundreds and hundreds of questions. You know, on the other side, the people in my life who were either part of my close-knit friends or family or people that I, you know, knew who had worked in marketing and so forth, who just, you know, really did nothing but cheer me on. And in those early days, that's really, you know, that's equally as important, because those early days are lonely and hard and full of tears. And I really needed that to go on.
Yeah. Do you remember the process of figuring out the recipe, or as they call it in, you know, scalable CPG world, the formula? Like, did you go to co-packers and they're like, no, not possible, can't do it, see ya?
I like to say I kissed a lot of frogs. There were a lot of people who turned me down. A lot of co-mans turned me down. Well, first of all, you know, the universe of pizza manufacturing is quite small, smaller than people would realize. And so I had here I was, you know, someone who never worked in the food industry, who had no credentials to back them up, who basically showed up and said, hi, I want to make a pizza crust out of cauliflower. You know, they thought I was absolutely bananas. Yeah. And most of them turned me down. I did ultimately find one who, you know, after a lot of work and back and forth, you know, took a shot. And ultimately, after a fair amount of time, we got it. But it is amazing how easy it is for people to turn you down in that early stage, because you don't have the volume necessary to, you know, fill their facility. And you know, it's a crazy idea from someone who, you know, really has no standing in the industry. So it did take it was a big leap of faith on a number of people's parts.
And then, okay, so you get the crust made and you find that co-man partner, and now it's time to pitch it to buyers and get it into some stores. Yes. And at that point, were you thinking, maybe I don't need to do stores? Was there ever like a, maybe I just launch this online or on Amazon and I see how it goes? Or were you very focused on brick and mortar from the get-go?
I was very focused on brick and mortar because this is a frozen product. And as wonderful as e-commerce is, it's still not, you know, it's still not really fantastic for frozen products, just
or
because frozen shipping. I'm sure, or refrigerated, because you know, frozen shipping is just ridiculous. Yeah. Although we did launch on Amazon, and that ended up, you know, being great. So I was focused on retail. I do remember very well that first win, as it were. which, you know, I'm not sure if your listeners know, but in the food world, you can pitch your local Whole Foods region with your product. Mm-hmm. And so for me, my local Whole Foods region was, you know, Southern California, SOPAC. And mm-hmm. so I distinctly remember buying a styrofoam container, putting in four, you know, very, very expensive pizza samples, right? Because I had to run the whole line just for these samples. And I wasn't allowed a meeting. They didn't give me a meeting. So I literally had to drop them off at the receptionist in the, you know, SOPAC headquarters and Whole Foods headquarters. And, you know, like I was dropping off my my child at a strange babysitter. And so, you know, and then about a week and a half later, I got an email from them saying, we tried them. We love them. We want to bring them into 30 stores. And I happened to be at a Starbucks at the time. And I remember I just wanted to buy everyone in the place a latte because I was so excited.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. And then, I mean, is this correct? Was it $5 million in sales in your first year? Is that accurate?
Yeah, my first full year. Yeah. Yeah, that
is. Holy mackerel.
Yeah. It was kind of crazy. I remember, actually, it's interesting. I do remember having a conversation with the person who was she wasn't even a full-time CFO. It was, you know, someone I had hired to sort of, you know, run the financial operations. And I remember having a conversation with her, and she was very, very clear that I would not even make $1 million in my first year. And how dare I even thought about it.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, really? And so, but I didn't let it deter me. And we ended up doing okay.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I have a bunch of questions.
Okay.
One, the people that you talk to as consultants, those original sort of crew of people that you assembled, did you end up hiring any of them? Like, did they become parts of your team, or did you find that going from that kind of ideation and conceptualizing phase into like practice, you needed a different set of people and skill sets, or did you find that they were just the right people to do that?
I did hire some of them for full-time contract employees, right?
Okay. So
because I needed them in those roles as I transitioned to having our own, you know, people in those positions. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, we need additional work. I mean, we need additional hands. So I still use some of them, although most of the positions we've transitioned in-house. You know, some of them I grew very close to, and you know, still keep in contact with, and you know, some have started their own businesses now, and you know, I cheer them on. So it's just a wonderful community.
And then the second question is, you know, I mean, I remember, I think everyone who listens to this on the regular like has heard the story, but we got our first purchase order out to Whole Foods in March of 2018. And that was for 14 New York City stores and also Fresh Direct. And then I kind of took a break and I figured I would get another purchase order in a couple weeks. But we got one the next day for four times the amount.
Wow.
And I remember I actually sat down on the floor and started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, we can't make this much sauce. We were like hauling buckets from like cold space to cold space. Like we didn't have a co-packer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we did like 80,000 in sales our first year or whatever it was. So it's a clearly very different story, but did it freak you out to go like that from zero to hero so quickly? I mean, I had a nervous breakdown at a PO. I can't imagine. Did it move faster than you were prepared for? Did you have the people? Did you have the bandwidth? How did you even know how to like support that kind of growth?
Well, in short, let me just say no, no, and no. Okay. I didn't have any of that. Was I surprised? Yes, very much so.
Right.
But, you know, I often say sometimes ignorance is bliss because I really didn't know what to expect in all fairness. So, yes, there were a lot of people who said, well, this isn't going to happen. This isn't going to happen. And don't expect this to happen. And mm-hmm. I also had a lot of people who said, wow, I've never seen this before. But, you know, not knowing, you know, not having a clear, you know, view on, you know, what should happen, it was helpful in some ways because I was just more malleable. I just, okay, well, this is all I know and this is what's happening. So this is my story and this is what I have to deal with. But yeah, I mean, it was the growth at that pace did put an extraordinary you know, burden on the company, on the supply chain, on the manufacturer, whatever. But we did it, you know, and I'm so proud of, you know, the team that we had at the time, which was a very small and mighty team. And you know, that's part of what makes the story so crazy and so wonderful.
Yeah, it's such a great story. And then my last question before we take a little break is, did you have to do marketing that first year, or did it kind of, was there just such a need for it in the market that it kind of sold itself? Like how did you get the word out? You know, how did people know that you existed, I guess is the big question.
So we did do a lot of marketing and, you know, in all fairness, while
that's
I didn't know, and
right
when, while I didn't know anything about the food industry per se, I did work in marketing for many years. And so I did know a little something about that. And so, you know, we lead with what we are comfortable with and what we know. And so, you know, for me, you know, the marketing came, you know, fairly easily. And so that's what I led with. And we became a very, you know, socially driven, you know, brand that, you know, started to elicit a lot of consumer engagement. And that felt really right for us at the time. And, you know, happened to, I think, helped fuel our growth.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm looking back and I'm like 2017, I think I had, I mean, I guess I must not have because I was in New York, but I feel like I've had Collie Power in my freezer for at least 2 or 3 years. Like
100%.
When would the earliest time that I would have gotten it?
You absolutely would have had it in 2017. So I left my job in May of 2016. We launched the company, meaning sold our first pizza in February of 2017. And, you know, very soon thereafter rolled out to lots and lots of retailers.
Right. Okay.
Including, you know, September of that very year, we were in Walmart.
Right. Yes. I want to talk about that. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and ask you lots more questions.
Great.
Just Egg is now the fastest growing egg brand in the United States. Bring more plant-based consumers in your doors with easy to use Just Egg. You can get started with a free sample. Just head to ju.st/HRN. That's ju.st/HRN. Made from plants, Just Egg is a better egg for you and for the planet. It's healthier, with no cholesterol and less saturated fat, and it's more sustainable. Just Egg uses less water and generates fewer carbon emissions. Most importantly, it's delicious. For our listeners who operate a food service establishment, you can get a sample for free. Head to ju.st/HRN. That's ju.st/HRN. Just Egg makes a delicious plant-based addition to any menu. It's available as a liquid scramble, great for omelets, frittatas, stir fries, and French toast. There's also a frozen pre-baked folded version that's ideal for filling breakfast sandwiches or topping salads. Chef Jose Andres calls Just Egg mind-blowing, and Bon Appetit says, it's so good, I feel guilty eating it. Put the fastest-growing egg brand on your menu. Get a free sample of Just Egg for your restaurant at ju.st/HRN.
I'm back with Gail Becker of Kali Power. Okay. There's also legend about you saying no to Costco, but you saying yes to Walmart. And that's a little counterintuitive for brands like me, because we've been sort of taught like Walmart is kind of, they will destroy you, little company, and Costco is actually like a nice place to build a brand and a little bit, you know, challenging on the cost side, but if you can figure it out, like actually a really great sort of business channel. So I'd love to hear that whole, what happened.
Yeah, there. Absolutely. And look, I mean, this is my story, right? This is what happened to Kali Power. I don't necessarily, I'm not making the recommendation that, you know, everyone, other brands should follow, right? In this, because, you know, everyone has to, you know, do what's right for them and you know, deal with what transpires. So for me, I did have an opportunity at Costco very early on. I did say no to it. I didn't say no to it because I wanted to say no to it. In fact, it was probably one of the hardest decisions I've had to make since starting Kali Power, was saying no to Costco so early on, because we were expanding so rapidly in retail. I was nervous that I wouldn't be able to keep up with Costco demand. And if there's one thing that I had learned, and lots of people much smarter than me had told me, is don't disappoint Costco, whatever you do, because you'll ruin any future chance you have. And so, you know, I made the decision that I had to say no, just because I was really nervous I wouldn't be able to deliver. So that's why I said no to Costco. Understood. For Walmart, you know, look, for me, I had a pretty good gig in corporate America. And if I was going to leave it, it was really going to be to, you know, my vision was really, I wanted, you know, more nutritional options accessible to all. That was really important to me. And what better way to do that than via Walmart? And so, you know, I think the Walmart Kali Power relationship has really been a unique and a wonderful one, because we each took an early bet on each other, right? But so look, Walmart today has lots of, you know, wonderful, you know, better for you options in their freezer set, but it wasn't necessarily like that, you know, back in 2017. And so they took an early bet on Kali Power, and I took an early bet on them. And I have to say, it's been a really great relationship. One that's very honest and transparent and hasn't always been smooth, but you know, I think like most of our retailer relationships, has been really, strong.
Yeah. A little side question about that. So, you know, like you, we lean hard into sort of that wholesale channel because we're refrigerated, because, you know, between the Instagram ads and the cost of shipping and the pick and pack, like, it's very hard to make any actual money direct to consumer right now on a refrigerated product. And I also, I'm a supermarket person. Like, I think there are some of us who are just like, we just enjoy the supermarket and that's where I want to be. And I like the shelves and I like the browsing. That said, we don't have control over their inventory management or when they restock the shelves after you sell out after a promo. And the more that we expand, the less control it feels that we have. When we were in the Northeast, I could have, you know, the TAs from the cooking school all went to visit Whole Foods on their way into work and out of work, and they would take pictures and merchandise the shelves, and it felt very manageable. And then as we started growing away from home, you know, we're in Fred Meyer right now, and I don't know what's going on there. And I've never been in one, you know, and I don't have that personal relationship. So I guess part of the question that I have is, how have you found building these relationships with your, you know, grocery store partners, you know, I know it's about trust, and I know it's, you know, if we're gonna miss a PO, we let them know ahead of time. We let them know about how we're remedying stuff. But how do you hold them more accountable when they're not exactly holding up their end of the bargain perfectly?
Mm-hmm. I do think, in all fairness, that the pandemic has changed some things. You know, for me personally, I went on also that 2017 and 2018, I literally went on every single sales call. I didn't,
right.
And there were a lot of them because our distribution was growing fast. And so I was able to build personal relationships with all mm-hmm. the buyers. Now, some of them have since left and so mm-hmm. forth. But I do think for me, it really helped, you know, having a face-to-face meeting and really having a one-on-one relationship. And yeah. that's something that I have drawn upon greatly. I do think, in all fairness to your point, that the pandemic certainly has changed things. Not only are we not able to have those one-on-one relationships, not only am I not, you know, can I not put a piece of pizza on a plate and, you know, personally mm-hmm. hand it to the individual, we're not meeting in person anymore. There's right. no shows anymore. They can't yeah. come by your booth and say hello. So it's a much, much more challenging environment and ecosystem with which to build those relationships. I feel for younger brands today because of that. On the hopeful side, you know, now that we're starting to, you know, ease out of the pandemic and, you know, people are getting vaccines and some of the rules are loosening up, and I'm sure mm-hmm. we'll start to see, you know, in-person meetings again. And I've already gotten, you know, the notices about the in-person shows returning. So I do mm-hmm. think that certainly will help. But I understand the void in between.
Yeah. Yeah. And then going back to sort of the marketing, you know, everyone has their superpowers, right? And I think a lot of this is just figuring out what yours are. And then the stuff that isn't your superpower, trying to delegate as effectively and as, you know, efficiently as possible exactly. and leaning hard into like what you really are good at. But at what point did the private label cauliflower crusts start popping up? And how did you handle that when they started to? Because it feels to me like that's when you really needed to lean into the power of the brand, which I feel very strongly. And as like a consumer, I'm choosing cauliflower over, you know, I hate to say it, but like 365 or whatever it is any day. But I don't know exactly why. Other than my brand.
Well,
feeling.
It's because you're a brand. Yeah. Like I won't buy private label, nor do I let anyone in my personal life buy private label for mm-hmm. exactly that reason. You know, we do believe in the power of the brand. And mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the private label of the cauliflower crust started with Trader Joe's, which mm-hmm. launched theirs about, I can't remember anymore, maybe 7 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. after cauliflower, maybe 8-9 months after cauliflower. And I remember thinking at the time, oh my God, my business mm-hmm. is over. That's it. Pack it up shop. Let's go. Call it a day. All that right. work for nothing. I was really wrong. Because many people found it to be an inferior product. That's not mm-hmm. me. You can ask Pop Sugar. They did a big headline on it. But even more than that, you know, all of the retailers wanted to play against Trader Joe's. And so those remaining ones that didn't have cauliflower crust brought in cauliflower. Mm-hmm. So that was certainly, you know, what we began to see in, you know, 2018 and what have you. Today, you know, it's a free for all out there. And there's lots of private label and, you know, lots of retailers push the private label, which mm-hmm. I understand to a point. But, you know, most retailers recognize that even if they have private label, they do need the power of the number one brand in the category. And obviously we are the market leader. We do, we're the number one cauliflower crust in America, the number one gluten-free crust, the number one better for you pizza. And so that's important, for both to grow. What I think you know, what I think retailers are now beginning to realize is that as they brought in more and more and more SKUs, that they weren't actually adding anything to the category. They were just cannibalizing mm-hmm. what they already had. And so I think now, post-pandemic, you're going to see a lot. I think we already have begun to see a lot of, you know, SKU rationalization and SKU optimization, right? Because just having all of those SKUs just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of counting on that. In our, you know, we're in a couple of different places in the store, and, you know, we have this little rainbow of joy, you know, next to 16 facings of, you know, vegan mayo
right.
in a tub, you know, and I'm like, do they need 16 facings? And like, do you need that many sauerkrauts? And,
right.
you know,
right.
like how many, you know,
yeah.
whatever yeah. dressing things, whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay. This all leads a little bit to innovation.
Okay.
Because my guess is that, you know, while I'm sure being you had bigger plans than just the pizza crust, my guess is that some of the innovation potentially was in response to sort of more and more pizza crust coming on. And I guess I'm kind of curious about how you thought about innovation. Is it just like, oh my gosh, we should do a tender? Or, you know, how much market research did you do? Were you always thinking, okay, let's look at the frozen aisle and just see what doesn't look good and see what we can make better? You know, how what's your thought process like a little bit around
yeah.
it?
In some ways, really all of the above. Mm-hmm. I think what, you know, what we felt pretty strongly about and ultimately we got, and I was really happy to see that, is we got buy-in to expand from two of mm-hmm. our most key stakeholders. One was from retailers mm-hmm. saying, okay, what do you have for me? What, how are you going to Kali-powerify another category? Because mm-hmm. I love what you did and I love the consumer that you brought into the frozen island. I want more. So one, we got the buy-in from the retailer. And then two, we got permission from the consumer.
Yep.
The consumer was saying, what do you have next? What are you going to do next? And, you know, and we really waited to make sure that we had that permission from both of those stakeholders. Mm-hmm. You know, once we did, we knew that Kali Power could be much more than, you know, a frozen pizza brand, which is obviously how we started. And today,
right.
Kali Power, you know, is a platform brand. It's not,
yep.
it's not a company that makes things out of cauliflower. It's a platform
right.
brand that really does magical things out of vegetables. And
I'm sort of hoping that you buy me eventually. Have you gotten that impression for me? I'm preparing myself to be acquired by you, Gail.
Okay,
so
well,
I'm listening
well, we
really
have no
carefully.
Money, so I love that, but okay.
You will. Oh, you will.
Well, you will too. I'm pretty convinced of that. So that is, and you know, and as such, We
right.
you know, we started to expand into other categories, and we do look for other sizable categories in the grocery store that can be optimized. My husband likes to say he envisions me like going through the grocery store wearing a little tutu and a fairy wand and saying,
right.
you can be better and you could be better and you could be better. And in some ways, you know,
yeah.
that is a little bit about what we're doing.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that leads to pasta, which
pasta.
I gotta say, kind of came out of left field for me. I was totally down with a bunch of the other things. We've been like making things with the tenders and our barbecue sauce that we just like, we're having so much fun.
Congratulations on the barbecue sauce. Looks so
thank
good.
You.
Can't wait to
yeah,
try.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. Thank you. But pasta, I did not expect. So tell me about that and how that came to be. And was that really consumer driven or, you know, tell me everything.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I will say that I'm glad that
you're surprised. I always like to surprise. I always like to create things that people never saw coming, which I think probably our chicken tenders fell into that category as well. And that makes me super happy. With pasta, it was probably a little bit easier, to be honest with you, because we know that people who love cauliflower pizza also love pasta. Mm-hmm. And when we looked at the category, what we found was we found products on both ends of the spectrum. So on the one end of the spectrum, lots of wonderful and delicious pasta products that were amazing, but really offered little nutritional benefit. On the other end of the spectrum, you had all of these pasta substitutes or whatever, quote unquote, or made from veggies or legumes or what have you. And they offered a better nutritional profile, but they didn't taste good. And they certainly didn't taste like pasta. And they didn't have the texture of pasta and they didn't hold up. And you're skimming. One of the boxes even says, you know, you might have to skim off some like, you know, scum off the top of the water, which is just so unattractive.
It's
so
great on a box.
Yeah. It looks great. I'm like, okay.
That's romance copy right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Right there. So I said, so what I love about our pasta and what we saw as the white space is that place in the middle, is that nutritionally, you know, profile, lowest calorie pasta, you know, fantastic nutritional profile, but it actually tastes like pasta. It is pasta.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it acts like it. And the experience of opening the package and like putting these beautiful ribbons into hot boiling water and just watching them flow and then tasting them. You know, we have this product made in Italy. And I encourage everyone to check out our website where we have the video from, we did a blind taste test in Italy with people who obviously know pasta. And then we surprised them that it was cauliflower and they couldn't believe it. And
it's crazy.
And it's really, it speaks volumes, about, I think the opportunity for this pasta and early results are in, and I'm super excited.
Yeah. Incredible. Okay. For our last couple of minutes, I want to talk about all the advice that you wish you had gotten, thoughts about building your team, thoughts about scaling, thoughts about money, you know, just, you know, if you could talk to people directly or, you know, even me, you can talk directly to me, you know, what do you wish that I could know and, you know, not learn the hard way?
Whoa, boy, that's a lot. I would say, I guess for anyone, you know, making the decision on whether they should jump or not, I would say, you know, definitely, you know, what are you waiting for? I always equate, you know, sort of, you know, jumping into entrepreneurialism with, you know, waiting for the right time to have kids. If you wait for the right time, it's never going to happen. So you might as well just do it. And I think that for me, that's very much what the decision to, you know, leave my comfortable job and start Cauliflower was all about. And I'm awfully glad I did. And I think what most people don't realize is how close I came to not doing it. Razor thin. And that really scares me. And so I, if there's anyone out there who's listening, who's thinking about making, you know, a similar jump, I would just ask them, you know, what are you waiting for? And then, you know, specific advice on lessons learned the hard way. Look, I've done, you know, a number of things right with Cauliflower. I've done a number of things wrong and things I wished I had done differently. You know, I'll just off top of mine, I guess, is, you know, I wished I had raised more money earlier. I don't think people realize how expensive it is to, you know, from a cash flow perspective to run a business, particularly a frozen business, which is actually the most expensive. And so I probably wished I had done that a bit earlier, but there's a number of things that, you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Yeah, always. Okay, Gail, I think you have a special surprise for everyone who is listening.
I do, and it's my favorite kind of special surprise. So just to thank everybody, because we could all use a little joy these days, right? I just wanted to give anyone and everyone who's listening a free Kali Power product. All Amazing. You have to do is send us a direct message on @KaliPower on any of our social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, what have you, and mention In the Sauce, and we'll send you a free coupon good for any one of our products.
Amazing. Gail, honestly, thank you so much for coming on. It's been just such a joy watching you and all the positivity and the power that you are bringing to this industry. I'm just honored that you are on the show. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to taste our pasta and sauce together.
Yeah. Romesco and your pasta. I'm
doing
it. Amazing. Yeah.
I'm doing it. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And all you listeners, thank you for continuing to listen and send me all of your notes. And Matt, it was fun being reunited with you as our engineer today. I don't know if he's going to chime in. There he is. Okay, and I will be back next week with another episode of In the Sauce.
In the Sauce is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.